It's John Bauer. I'm Heidi Holton. It's a Thursday morning show, KEXE, KBXE. Social isolation and loneliness are conditions we often associate with the elderly, but today these issues have sharply increased across generations. Baby boomers, Gen Xers, millennials, and post-millennials all report declining number of friends and social isolation. Chaim Herring is an author, a presenter, a nonprofit organizational futurist with a specialty in faith-based communities. In his new book, he blends real-world experience and original research to look at cross generations of people. It's called Connecting Generations, Bridging the Boomer, Gen X, and Millennial Divide. Chaim Herring lives in Minneapolis. He joins us now. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Heidi and John. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So the photo on the cover of your book is so telling. Four people all doing the same thing. Tell us what it looks like.
Well, it's four people doing the same thing alone when they could be doing it together. So today, people seem to be retreating further and further inside their devices. And technology is neutral, but the use of technology across generations can be either a bridge or a barrier.
So I don't understand, if all four of these people, how could they do things together?
So it took me a little while to kind of accept this reality and to realize that we have choices about how we use technology, whether it was the first television that came into my grandparents' or parents' home, the huge laptop, desktop that I had to lug for the first time. And I realized, you know, it's not the technology, it's the relationship piece. And here's an example. There are a number of programs around the world, actually, that use technology as a bridge to connect seniors and teens. Some of them are called teeners, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. And in these programs, technology is a platform because the younger people are coaching the older people up on how to use technology. But because there's a relationship, that older person is able to look at that younger person on an off day and say, you know, I see that you don't quite look right today. Is there something troubling you? And because younger people have few older people to talk to, and it's not cool to talk to your parents at any age, but certainly when you're a teener and when you're in your 20s, then suddenly they've got someone with resilience, with experience, and that's just one small example.
Tell us a little more about what you've written here about loneliness. You describe it as an epidemic.
You zeroed in on a word that I really struggled with. Once you label something an epidemic, of course, it elevates, and I believe it needs to be elevated, the condition that's identified. And epidemic means that, as you said in your introduction, that this is something that is having an impact, social isolation, on all generations. And unlike in previous eras, when it was people who were older who felt it more, what's really alarming, and that's why I use the word epidemic, is that we see increased rates of social isolation among younger generations. And the greatest predictor of longevity is social connectedness. The greatest predictor of problems later in life, obesity, poor health, lack of social connections, inability to work, aside from which, just imagining the sheer pain of young people not having others to talk with, extrapolate that out over decades, and it is epidemic.
I just wanted to bring something up out of the box a little bit here. So I'm a grandfather, all right? And I have my son and his girlfriend are phone people. Everybody is, all right?
And I'm going to interrupt John and say he is a phone person.
And I am a phone person,
yes,
too.
Okay.
I am a phone person, too.
Well, I have to interrupt because can I borrow the phrase phone person?
Yeah, we'll give you the rights to do that.
Okay.
Okay, so we're talking about the isolation. We're talking about adults working with young people. So in your mind, Chaim, how does a young family like my son and his girlfriend raise a child to be better at communicating and not being locked in on the phone, or maybe being locked in on a phone, but more in a more constructive way. How do you take an infant and mold them into maybe the person you want us all to be?
Now, Heidi, did you say that John is a phone person too?
Yes, he is, absolutely.
Uh-huh. So it seems to run generationally in the family.
Right, so, but again, yes.
I'm going to answer your question because I'm a grandfather too, and I see this as a very different era than the one in which I raised my own children. I think it begins with small steps like modeling. So when you're having a family gathering, right, can you take 15 minutes out of a meal or a celebration and just ask everybody to be device-free for 15 minutes. When you as a grandparent, and I think the whole issue of grandparenting, it's not just that parenting is new, right? But grandparenting in this age is new. When you're with a grandchild, can you actually be the one who sings a song, who gets creative with play, who goes for a walk without looking at a screen? And I think that connecting people around shared work is a good way to open up space for conversation. We've got to break the stereotypes, inject more empathy, and that won't happen unless we take control of our devices and do some modeling.
Okay, so you said a parent or a grandparent ask everyone not to use their device. As a parent, could you demand that they don't use the device? The demand's a hard word. But you know what I'm saying? Asking and requiring are two different things.
I think that modeling, for me, has always been the most effective. I mean, seriously, how often have we sort of, you know, those who are a little older lectured those who are a little bit younger? That shows some sign of not fully understanding how much their world has changed. And I'd rather begin with more curiosity about, you know, tell me what it's like when you're not on the phone. What does that feel like? Tell me, or instead of hitting it directly, tell me about what you're doing at work today. I'd love to hear about it. And just get back in the habit of a little bit more conversation. And good luck with the demand.
Well, that makes total sense, because this is the way it's going to be. Yeah. And you have to make the adjustments.
Can I throw one more out that even spooked me a little bit more?
Yeah.
What happens when we go screenless? Where suddenly, remember the first Star Wars movie with Princess Leia?
Oh, yeah.
Right? There's no interaction. Well, at the Mall of America this past Christmas, I think there was a holographic elf named Ellie, if I'm not mistaken, where individuals could ask this 3D holographic elf questions and be directed to what a gift purchase might look like for a teenager or an older person, what store it was at. What's going to happen when we don't even have screens anymore? Instead of "Are You My Mother?" You know, that was P.D. Eastman who wrote that book. Will kids be asking that of Alexa, Cortana, and Siri?
Oh, my gosh. We're talking with Chaim Herring. He is from Minneapolis. His book is out. It's new. It's called Connecting Generations, Bridging the Boomer, Gen X, and Millennial Divide. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about the differences between these generations, especially when it comes to workplaces. I think we are seeing more and more of many generations in a workplace, in nonprofits especially. But what are you seeing, and what do you do as you work with folks?
Well, that's a challenge. I mean, I think that there are four generations now in the workplace, and each one has a different communication style. So first, what's really critical, and I think this has always been true, it's just more so, is organizations have to be really clear about their mission and their vision and their values, and then figure out how to distribute it across different generations, right? So someone who's younger, let's say a Gen Z, a post-millennial, may say, okay, give me my task and get out of my way. and let me do my work where I want to do it, when I want to do it, as long as I get it done. I want to be judged on performance. You might find that millennials might more prefer teams, and that creates some sort of struggle, not just with those who are younger, but sometimes those who are older, who are saying, enough teamwork already, like, go get to work. So one of the challenges is, can those who are in positions of influence and authority, and here I look at Gen X, and they're often overlooked, and they are moving. I think over 50% of leaders, at least in the business world, are now Gen Xers. They can remember a time when it was less digital but had to quickly migrate to the digital world. So it means communications, requiring, instead of emails, sometimes everybody does have to be in the room face-to-face, or at least on Skype or Zoom or some other platform. Parameters need to be set flexibly, but greater parameters, and being clear up front about who is in charge of a task, and does that task need to be driven by seniority or ability?
You know, one of the things, and John and I were talking about this, I think there's a benefit. We live in a small town, small area, and we cover a big geography of northern Minnesota, but all these small towns. But I think because there aren't as many people, my life is different here than it was when I lived in St. Paul, where I usually hung out with people my own age. Now I know a lot of people on either side of it, and it's, to me, it's one of the benefits of living here and having these social groups that kind of make up of that. But I think generally we do tend to hang out with people around our same age group, don't we?
Well, we do, and you know, I don't want to create a nostalgic past that never really existed. I think it's kind of natural for people to want to be with those who are their own age, but when there are only three or four generations, and very often those older generations move back home with older adult children, there was more social connection. Now we've got a huge span of generations, and I think for compassionate reasons, there's this model of continuum of care for the elderly, a campus model with different levels of dependence and independence. But those, at least in the cities, they're usually far away from residential neighborhoods. So I think that the housing industry can actually be a part of the solution. If a community center is going up, what does it look like to reimagine having a place for six generations and moving from multi-generational, which is a number, to intergenerational, which means relational?
So I want to go back to this isolation thing and in the form of communication. So people who are isolated maybe lack communication skills. And people who have their noses in their phones or their computers all the time and are wrapped up in that maybe don't have perhaps the greatest communication skills. Then how do we create great leaders out of these people?
We actually invest in them by creating not traditional kinds of leadership programs, but the new soft skills that are needed today. And that is such a critical question. I don't believe that there really has been enough attention to this question of cultivating leadership in this era. And what we have is potential for greater connectedness, but what I like to call social ineptitude, right? We have more apps to connect us, but as the book cover photo indicates, if you don't make eye contact with people, and you don't get to learn their social cues, the potential impact of words, both positive and negative, then we're going to continue to fragment. So it's an investment in a different kind of leadership development program.
Is it something we, and maybe they do, is it something we address in schools, like junior high and senior high and when they're young?
Well, it is, but you know, teachers are, I have a lot of empathy for them. You know, every 2 to 3 years, new curriculum, new standards. Yeah. They don't necessarily have the time that they need to work on those skills. But I think you're on target. It has to be a mobilized community effort. So, for example, in St. Louis Park, where I live, which is right outside of Minnesota, there's a wonderful nonprofit called Children First. And the idea is to engage adults in the lives of all children and youth. Schools are involved, nonprofit community, faith-based community, business community. It's a full-on mobilization.
I've heard from people in the community here of generational differences kind of getting in the way when it comes to political parties, you know, local organizations, as well as faith communities. What are you seeing there?
A lot of fragility, a lot of fear of getting into a confrontation, or people who have just become more confrontational because they've lost that understanding of the power that their words can have. There's no accountability for it. But there are programs nationally, and I'm not recommending any particular one, but there's one called the Conversation Project. And communities, you know, trained facilitators, because you can't just put people in proximity with one another. There needs to be some facilitation with people who understand how to navigate these conversations. So there are groups that are really working on how to pull back on judgment and open up more curiosity to get to know, why does somebody hold a particular view? What in their life informed their experience? And can you then get to that person through that experience where perhaps maybe they were hurt in some way or misunderstood, and then use that to help them see how someone else might feel with a statement that they've made?
Good stuff. Good stuff.
It's Chaim Herring, and his book is called Connecting Generations, Bridging the Boomer, Gen X, and Millennial Divide. You can find more information at his website, chaimherring.com. We've only skimmed the surface here, but thank you so much for your time.
Well, I want to thank both of you, and I will credit you for the use of phone people.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, Chaim.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye. You're listening to the Thursday Morning Show, connecting you across generations, right?
Yeah, for sure. That was really, really good. I wonder what, you know, in 5 years, what this book should be like.
Yeah.
Huh?
You were talking about phone people.
Mm-hmm.
And add a meal to not look at your phones. We could all start having like a bowl and say, okay, put your phones in here.
I do that with my basketball team, and they literally start shaking, and they start looking for the bowl longingly. That's terrible.
But then do they get over it, or are they still just shaking?
Well, no,
the whole time?
that was the beauty of this thing that happened the last time at Christmas. At Christmas time, I said, you're putting your phones in the box. And I sent them all downstairs where there was a TV and stuff like that. And if you could have heard the decibel level of their joy in communication, they forgot about their phones. Uh-huh. And they actually discovered communicating. I mean, I know that sounds crazy, but I witnessed it for 6 months. And that's the most they've ever communicated. And it was crazy. I thought, what's going on down there?
Yeah.
They were actually having fun and making conversation. So maybe we just need to do that thing, like he said, let's put the phones down and let's have dinner. Let's put the phone down and have a 5-minute conversation. Doesn't have to be a 30-minute conversation. Let's have a 5-minute conversation. And I think those are the things that he's right on. You got to do growing up and as an adult.
Yeah.